This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
Close-minded and kind of dismissive of the queer community in Texas. One in particular that I heard was someone saying, "A rainbow, never before seen in Texas," when joking about the seeming lack of a queer community in Texas, and that really frustrated me. So I devoted my final paper to the class to be about the queer community in Texas with a focus on the importance of acknowledging their presence so as not to erase them. Queer individuals have existed and made space for themselves throughout Texas history, and to think otherwise by only focusing on the oppressors erases the resistors. So in the spring semester, as a continuation with my work from the fall, I was able to join William & Mary's LGBTQ plus research project, which is a faculty and student run research project that is aiming to create a database and archive focused on LGBTQ stories in Virginia. With an already extensively curated archive, I was able to create a digital exhibit, the title of which that I reused for this presentation, as you can see, is Love Thy Neighbor, Queer Identities and Organized Religion in Richmond, Virginia. In this exhibit, I explore the intersection of religion and the queer community in Richmond, Virginia, not with a specific focus on the Episcopal Church, but clearly this exhibit still directly sent me into what I've been doing this summer at St. David's. I was really fortunate to be able to connect with Dr. Hernandez-Arisman, who has advised me throughout the whole process, and I'm really grateful for her. So without further ado, let's get into this. So the main focus of my project this summer was to collect oral histories from current and former members of the St. David's staff and parish who are LGBTQ+, to begin fleshing out the history of the queer community at St. David's. Taking people's oral histories, which basically just looks like me sitting down with the individual or couple that I was interviewing, having them sign a consent form, hitting record and having a conversation with them, was one of the most interesting forms of research I've ever been able to do. What was so great about it was I could just ask the questions I wanted to know and then listen and learn from people that I've grown up around, who I admire, and just learn from them and have them share all their wisdom with me. I had the honor of interviewing Lori Iserloh, Jess Chapin, Joe Sanchez, Jeremy Thompson, Ann Jenkins, Stacey Hubbard, former curate Father Michael Horbath, and former parishioners Anthony Chappell and Dennis Driscoll. Following a list of questions provided by Dr. Hernandez-Arisman and going rogue when the conversation called for it, I inquired about where each individual grew up, their experiences with the church as a member of the LGBTQ plus community, their faith journey, and their hopes for the future of the church. The topics of conversation ranged from Austin in the early 80s up to present day. I was then able to take what I learned in the interviews and do additional research in the archives as well as online to fill out the story of the queer community at St. David's. I will be contextualizing what I learned from the interviews within these four major events. I will be paraphrasing and only briefly going over the stories shared with me during the interviews during this presentation. So I encourage you all to listen to them on your own time when you have the chance. We are still working with the church and communication staff to figure out the best way to get the oral histories out to everyone and how to make them available to the public. But I promise it'll get out there. And when it does, I really do encourage you all to listen. I learned a lot and I hope that you can too. Okay. This is hard. All right. AIDS in Austin. So though the push for inclusion in gay rights was well underway due to the Stonewall riots in 1969, the AIDS epidemic heightened the need for queer rights to be pushed for faster to combat negligence from the government. The first case of HIV in Austin was recorded during the summer of 1983. Austin, a lot smaller at the time, had a growing community of queer young adults and youth. Joe Sanchez, a member of this community in the 1980s, described in his oral history interview the decimation of the gay community in Austin during the AIDS epidemic. You can see on the left an image taken after my interview with Joe and their husband, Jeremy Thompson. Within the scope of my research, the story of St. David's interaction with the queer community in Austin started with the AIDS outreach in the late 80s. Found in the annual parish reports in the St. David's archives, St. David's began funding outreach grants to the AIDS services of Austin in 1987. As described in the outreach grant report, the AIDS Services of Austin worked with people dying of AIDS and their families and provided counseling, help, medical care, and home services. St. David's continued funding these grants into the early 90s. By 1995, The Messenger, the St. David's newsletter, had multiple articles throughout the year encouraging people to get involved with in volunteering with AIDS care teams. I have the photo, a photo at the bottom of that I took at the Austin History Center of an advertisement for the AIDS care teams found in one of the St. David's Looking Ahead announcements. These teams of volunteers would be trained at Good Shepherd Episcopal Church to assist those living with AIDS by conducting phone visits, doing their laundry, meal preparation, reading to them, shopping for them, as well as providing companionship during this often isolating disease. Joe Sanchez mentioned in his interview that he first heard about St. David's through the outreach efforts in the 90s, even though it would not be until the 2010s when he made his way here himself. Thus, by the late 90s, St. David's was fairly welcoming towards the queer community. Anne and Stacy, as well as Lori and Jess, described the welcome they felt from the church leadership and many of those in the parish. You can see on the right a photo shared with me by Jess Chapin from the baptism of her and Lori's son, Oliver, in 2000. Even though it was not perfect and there was occasional discomfort from members of the parish, St. David's was well ahead in efforts to include queer parishioners into the life of the church heading into the 2000s. The early 2000s saw a lot of conflict, though, however, within the Episcopal Church nationally, as well as in Texas, over the debate regarding the ordination of LGBTQ plus people. When looking around at where St. David's is now, it can be easy to forget the difficult conversations had and small steps taken to bring about change. Some of the major roadblocks still in the way at the time were a lack of communication between both sides, those who wanted full inclusion and those who rejected it, and Canon 43. Canon 43 was a canon that prohibited for there to be homosexual members of the clergy in the Diocese of Texas. In 2003, Gene Robinson was elected bishop in New Hampshire, becoming the first out gay bishop in the Episcopal Church. During his ordination, Episcopal churches across the United States began seeing a decline in numbers from parishioners, with some churches even attempting to fully secede from the Episcopal Church and the Anglican Communion. Many were unsuccessful due to property right reasons, though. The Diocese of Texas was no different. In an article published in The Living Church, written by Reverend Dr. Russell Levinson, an Episcopal priest who lives in Houston, he states, "Some will cite the 2003 General Convention, which approved the Episcopal Church's first openly gay bishop, as the turning point, and the Episcopal Church annual shows an important decline. We have lost more than 250,000 baptized members and 325 parishes and missions. Episcopal Congregations Overview records that 89% of Episcopal congregations reported conflicts or disagreements in the last 5 years, and adds the ordination of gay priests or bishops was the most frequently mentioned source of conflict. Lori Iserlo described in her interview her call to ministry to work towards full inclusion of LGBTQ plus members into the life of the church in the Diocese of Texas following the ordination of Gene Robinson. She would go on to play a big part at St. David's and in the diocese to advocate for the full inclusion of LGBTQ plus members. And the image on the right shows me and her after I finished my interview. And I don't know if you can tell, but I'm just kind of sitting there in awe of her. She's a really cool person, and definitely listen to her oral history interview. I learned a lot from her and about the whole process that I'm unable to include in this presentation. So the road to full inclusion on a local and diocesan level was long, and there were a lot of steps that needed to be taken. On a diocesan level, many changes, big changes, would not be seen until 2012, when conflict in the church over the issue of sexuality was really starting to divide people. And as we went into the 2012 General Convention, where the church decided to approve same-sex blessings in the Episcopal Church in an effort to combat conflict and encourage respectful conversation, Bishop Andy Doyle authored a document titled Unity and Mission. In it was stated that the way to achieve unity and mission was to agree to disagree. And it said, we must stop being against one another and start being for Jesus. There was general concern among leaders in the Episcopal Church in Texas that people had lost focus on the mission and purpose of the Episcopal Church, letting issues of sexuality divide instead of creating unity in a shared mission. However, for those promoting full inclusion of LGBTQ plus members into the life and body of the church, agreeing to disagree was not the end goal. While it aimed to limit the pushback from parishioners about the inclusion of queer people into the life of the church, it also delegitimized efforts being made to improve the inclusion of queer people. It also does not meet many of our current standards for how issues such as these should be approached. However, I believe this step was necessary in order to gain a ground in which conversations could be had. If the Episcopal Church could have both sides approach the other with the shared interest in unity and recognition of each other as fellow Christians, understanding could be gained. In my interview with Stacey Hubbard and Ann Jenkins, both pictured right here, with family at their son's wedding this past June, congratulations, they mentioned a discussion held at Camp Allen that they attended to discuss with people around the diocese before and against the ordination of LGBTQ plus people. They looked back on the experience fondly, mentioning the bus ride over to Camp Allen and getting to know others at St. David's who felt strongly one way or the other about the topic. And they shared that once at Camp Allen, rules were set in place to avoid conflict and participants were broken up into small groups for discussions. I asked them what they felt was the role of these discussions in creating change. I hadn't considered how discussions where neither side walked away with something achieved a very important step in creating change. But they told me that discussions like this were exactly what was able to open the door to create change. People may not have left with a tangible achievement, but minds were open, borders between sides were crossed, and the feeling of us against y'all was lessened. Conversations in general was a big theme that continued popping up in my oral histories. Conversations with the bishop, with parishioners, within the church. There's just something that I found really interesting while I was interviewing people. Gene Robinson, the Bishop of New Hampshire that I mentioned earlier, noted, when you're in an interim period, when people are changing their minds about something major, you go through all kinds of iterations that you would never be satisfied staying in. It's one of the steps in getting to where you need to be. This is what was so pivotal about the decade in between his ordination in 2003 and 2013, when Canon 43 was repealed and we had the first same-sex blessing in the Diocese of Texas. Hundreds of small steps were taken in those years, which allowed for the strides the Episcopal Church was able to make in 2013. GLE, which stood for Gay, Lesbian, and Everyone Else, formed in 2006 and was mentioned frequently in my conversations with parishioners. What I took away most from their different experiences with GLE was the way in which it was able to foster a community and provide people a chance to connect with others in the queer community at St. David's, as well as deconstruct the closet for youth at St. David's, who by being able to go to the potlucks held with their parents and see queer adults living their lives, were just kind of able to grow up in that environment. Queer parishioners continue to be included more and more into the life of the church. In February 2013, Anthony Chappell and Dennis Driscoll were the first gay couple to receive the same-sex blessing in the Diocese of Texas. They look back on that day fondly, and when asking them to recall what they could of that ceremony, I was overwhelmed with the love they spoke of, which saturated the church and those in attendance. Thanks to their generosity, I have a few moments pictured from their day up here, as well as a letter Barack Obama sent them congratulating them on their union and the letter from Bishop Doyle giving his blessing for St. David's to perform the ceremony. 2 years later, in 2015, the Supreme Court would rule in favor of legalizing same-sex marriages across the country, and St. David's would go on to perform many marriage ceremonies for queer couples. 2017 was the year in which the first married gay man was employed as clergy within the Diocese of Texas. Father Michael Horvath served as curate and director of community engagement and outreach here at St. David's. He's pictured on the right here. Father Michael was also the one who started the Open Table, a series of services for and by the LGBTQ plus community. When I asked him about the process behind starting it, he told me that it was born out of a desire to situate his personal faith and spirituality within the context of his sexuality. What he felt he needed was a community of like-minded people with which to worship. In the interview, he expressed amazement that it's still going strong and delight in the ways it has evolved into something to meet the needs of the parish now. Last night, Open Table held its annual Pride Eucharist in the historic sanctuary of the church prior to the Austin Pride Parade. Along with the spaces provided for the LGBTQ plus community at St. David's, in my interview with Joe and Jeremy, they noted how at this point the queer community is also just so incorporated into every aspect of the parish and in every service. You see queer people on the altar, ushering, participating on the vestry, and in other ministries. So what is needed now? The changes from the past 2 decades alone are pretty staggering. And with time moving so fast and change happening around us on a daily basis, what's most needed at one moment in time often doesn't hold up to what we need now and moving forward. Glee, an important part of the stories for many of the people I interviewed, as it allowed them to find a community of queer people at St. David's, was vital to the life of the queer community in the church a decade ago, and now has lost some of the same need it once had by the parish. This is a sign of growth, and it's important to celebrate both the role Glee played at the time as well as where we are now. To remind you of the quote by Jean Robinson about how we go through interim periods of change, different iterations of agreements, and all that, in the same way, different iterations of what the parish will need is constantly going to evolve, and that is a sign of growth. So where are we now, and how do we grow from here? St. David's and the Diocese of Texas have made great strides in the past several decades towards inclusion of queer people into the life and body of the church. It's adapted to what the community needs now, but we are, of course, still in the state of Texas, which unfortunately has only become more hostile towards the queer community, especially those in the trans community, over the past decade. At the beginning of the internship, as I was creating a list of people to interview, I was concerned that no one on the list that I had was transgender. I was afraid that I was leaving out an important voice in the project. But I realized that I cannot force a demographic for the presentation. I can only do what I can to include as many voices as possible and then ask myself why certain voices are missing. For a few reasons, mostly concerning safety and privacy of certain individuals, I chose not to reach out to some of the trans young adults who are a part of the parish and was unsure who I could contact to interview any trans adults. The makeup of our parish as it is now is increasingly more diverse. And when you take a moment to consider those who are missing, it tells a story. There are not many trans adults at St. David's, likely due to the hostile environment our state and country has created for them. And while we cannot control who enters into the doors of our church, we can do our best to learn, grow, and extend our hands and welcome to all who enter. And maybe in the future, an increase of the trans population at St. David's will also be able to tell a story. So one of the final questions I asked during my interviews with each person was, what are your hopes for the future of St. David's? And the general consensus was, why stop here? There's a lot of work left to be done to promote full inclusion of other minority communities and provide outreach to our neighbors right outside our doors in the city of Austin. Greater ministry to UT students, Hispanic people, Black people, and others were included in some of the conversations. To quote Martin Luther King Jr. from his letter from Birmingham Jail, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And I was reminded of that phrase over and over again from the conversations I had with everyone I interviewed. They were not just concerned with the progress made and inclusion granted towards the LGBTQ plus community at St. David's, but were eager to continue extending the hand of St. David's towards others who have historically been excluded from our church. So how can you get involved? We want to hear your stories. The oral histories I've collected this summer are a part of a larger project St. David's historians have been doing as part of the 175th anniversary. I chose to focus on queer voices, but there is still a lot missing from the story of St. David's that we would love for you to add to. Also, if you're interested in the work behind the project, please contact the historians at St. David's about how you can get involved researching and even conducting oral history interviews yourself. I can honestly tell you it's the most interesting thing I've ever done, and I would love for you all to get involved. So to try and convince you further, everyone look at that picture of the Austin History Center on the far right and say, ooh, ah, it's so pretty, right? Ooh, wow. Yeah, wouldn't you love to spend the afternoon in there doing research about our church or whatever you find interesting? And look at the photo of the archive at St. David's behind me. But I had to send that to the people that were funding this internship. And look and see how organized and beautiful it looks and go, ooh, ah. Isn't it so well organized by Mitty and the other archivists? And wouldn't you like to look through the annual reports, vestry minutes, and copies of the Messenger dating all the way back to the 1800s? Yeah. Thank you. That was great. It can be really fun just to go through the reports and see what you can find. Just to tidbit about an experience I had while in the archive. I was looking at the outreach grant reports in the 80s for AIDS Services of Boston, and I started in with the annual parish report from 1986 and was working my way backwards. And 1986 happened to be the year that the St. David's parking garage was finished being constructed. And so I all over the annual parish report were things where people saying, yay, it's done being constructed. And then as I was going backwards in 85 and 84, people were like, oh, like, you know, it's progress is being made and we can't wait for it to be done. And then in 1983, the annual parish report was like, man, like we've had problems with parking this year. Like we're going to need to do something about that. I don't know. Like, guess we'll have to figure that out. And that was just fun. And as someone who grew up in the church, it was a lot of fun for me to connect to the history of the church and hear the voices of past rectors and the reports, in just kind of a more real way than I ever thought I would experience. And so I would really encourage you all to do the same and try and have that experience for yourself. So that concludes my presentation. Thank you all so much for coming and listening to me ramble. I would be happy to answer any questions if you have any. Thank you. Yes.
This is the very first part, so I don't know if you attributed this at all to the, to the queer parishioners and the life in Boston. But did you interview a straight?
I did not.
White guy my age. What we thought.
I did not. That was not within the scope of what I was doing. But I think that, you know, straight white men your age voices are also important, and I do think that as the oral histories of the church continue to be expanded, I would love for you to be interviewed. Please contact Laura and yes.
As a straight white old guy, to me, that this whole question of homosexuality and all that, I am really looking forward to the day when it's not.
Yeah, absolutely.
We appreciate you.
Love you, Jordan.
Let me just tell you all, you all don't know, I didn't tell you about that, Miss Jordan Carroll, they're like the famous opponents that they want me to do. They would come out to support, you know, blessings of same sex relationships, and it was like trying to sell the business.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Yes.
Are these oral histories available anywhere for us to hear?
They are not at the moment. We are still working with the church communication staff to figure that out and how to make it best publicly available to y'all. But the goal is that, yes, they will be available soon. Yes.
How do you describe the history or, I suppose, your experience growing up in the church, like in mm-hmm. this more progressive world where I suppose queer communities and same-sex marriage and mm-hmm. becoming more acceptable? How would you describe your experience growing up within that, seeing it change, and how did this project contribute to that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you plan?
I did not. That's my friend Samantha, everyone. Say hi, Samantha. that wasn't really something that I, growing up in this church wasn't, I mean, I loved the church, but it wasn't really something that I considered special or out of the ordinary. It wasn't until I was in my class this past year and people were talking about, how the church as a whole, not just the Episcopal Church, has handled the queer community in the past, and I realized, like, oh, like I had a pretty unique experience. I'm pretty sure the first ever marriage ceremony that I went to was Dennis and Anthony's. And that was just normal. And I think that was one of because of how like normalized it was for me growing up in the church, I honestly wasn't expecting to hear all the all the different ways in which it was like hard to get to where we are now in the church, because it felt easy just because I was growing up here. So yeah, that has been really interesting. Yes.
So how proud are your parents? They're sort of watching you with a little kid.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
They're grandparents here too.
Good job.
Thank you. Yes.
Hey, so I came in a few minutes late, so I may have missed this contextualization, but I know you can talk a little bit about your work in Richmond. How is this project or your experience you're going to inform the work you're doing in Richmond on that?
So at the moment, I'm not sure if I'll be going back to Richmond for now. I'm going to be starting abroad for a bit, but I do want to do that in the future. Whenever I get back to William & Mary my senior year, I think a kind of in the same sense that I was in the class how we were talking about how the idea of being queer and Southern shouldn't be a paradox for people. I kind of felt the same way about being queer and religious. That should not be a paradox, and that should not be something that I don't want it to be something that people are surprised about or have a million questions about, because it's just identities, it's just people. So that was a lot of what influenced my work going into the project about queer communities in Richmond, Virginia, and the churches there, and what then influenced me going into this. So I'm not sure that I'll be going back to do the work with Richmond at the moment, but I think this in general, like that kind of theme of queer people in the church is something that I want to continue exploring. And there's a lot still to be done within just here at St. David's with this. Like I was able to interview only so many people this summer and only do so much research. And I, started with 1980s. And there's, queer people existed before AIDS. So there's still a lot of work to be done, and I would love to continue doing this.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.